I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. Less than 24 hours after her first nominee to lead the Baltimore City Police Department withdrew from the process, Baltimore Mayor Catherine Pugh has named Michael Harrison, the superintendent of the New Orleans Police Department, as her new nominee to lead the BPD. After more than two decades on the New Orleans police force, Michael Harrison was picked to lead that troubled department in 2014. By many accounts, he has been a successful chief. Today on Midday, Mayor Pugh joins us to explain why she thinks Harrison is the right choice to transform Baltimore's beleaguered department. Plus, we'll have analysis of the Harrison pick with Jane Miller of WBAL Television, Andy Green of the Baltimore Sun, and law enforcement expert Matthew Horace. That's all coming up when Midday starts right after the news. Good afternoon and welcome. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for joining us. There have been many, many developments developing quite quickly over the last 24 hours in the search for Baltimore's next police commissioner. Joel Fitzgerald, the commissioner in Fort Worth, Texas, was to have attended some community meetings over the weekend, this past weekend here in Baltimore. He was not able to do that because his son, a teenage son, encountered some very serious medical emergencies that needed to be tended to. There was a meeting. Dozens of people spoke out against Mr. Fitzgerald's appointment, and Mr. Fitzgerald then, a few days later, withdrew his name from consideration for the top job. So that, as of yesterday morning, we appeared to be back to square one. The process that had led Mayor Catherine Pugh to nominate Joel Fitzgerald took about 8 months, and the mayor scheduled a press conference for yesterday afternoon and then canceled it. And then this morning, Mayor Pugh announced that the superintendent of the New Orleans Police Department, Michael Harrison, who had been involved in the search process during this past year, would be her next nominee to lead the Baltimore Police Department. In a statement that the mayor's office released this morning, Mr. Harrison is quoted as saying, "My first priority will be to drive meaningful cultural change within the department, such that not only is there a renewed sense of purpose and mission among those sworn to protect and serve, but that citizens' trust is restored to a new level that enables true collaboration and confidence." Mayor Catherine Pugh joins us on the line. Madam Mayor, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you, Tom.
So can you walk us through what happened over these last 24 hours once Mr. Fitzgerald withdrew his nomination? Did you call Mr. Harrison? Did he call you? How did it come down?
No, I called him.
And what was that conversation like?
Well, as you well know, there was a process that we went through for a number of months as it relates to working with PERF, the Police Executive Research Firm, that helps you to select police chiefs from around the country. That process began here in my office in April of 2018. And they had a long, lengthy discussion with me around the process and how the process should go and what we should be looking for. They also invited me down to Nashville, Tennessee, because they were having a national conference of police executives from around the country, and to sit with at least five police chiefs from around the nation so that they could advise me on what they thought I needed as it related to a police chief for Baltimore City. Included police chiefs from as far as L.A. to Portland to Miami to Chicago, who spent a couple hours with me talking about the need for a police chief or what the process should be, and also said to me that the process for selecting a top-notch police chief who is already active in the police department would require some confidentiality because these folks are on jobs and did not want to lose their jobs that they were in. And so, but they said, "We can help you, and so we want to provide you with candidates from across the country," and they did that. We also sent three of our own individuals down to the final end, to the interview process.
Was so, Mr. Harrison one of those chiefs who was advising you at that point in the process?
No, he was not.
But his name did come up early in the conversations, did it not?
No, not in Nashville, not at all. No.
So there have been press reports that have said that Mr. Harrison, at least at some point in the proceedings, was the first choice.
I'm trying to give you the entire process.
Uh-huh.
So the entire process began in April in this office. The next process was in May in Nashville, Tennessee. His name was not in that process at all. And then there was a open application process, of which included seven of the individuals that were applied. We asked folks to apply. I think of the seven, four people actually did apply. And then there were 51 applications altogether that we pared down and included the three of the individuals from Baltimore who interviewed in Miami. I think that would have been around September or October of this past year, and because the National Organization of Police Executives were meeting there. Three of our candidates from Baltimore actually went through that interview process. At that time, I think I was not there, so I was not in that process. Perf, I believe, ranks police chiefs around the country as some of the top, and I believe that his name was mentioned as one of the top police executives. And I think there were conversations with him, but he was not available at that time to apply for the position here because he was on track to become one of the police chiefs in the country with the highest crime reduction rate in the nation. And so I reached out to him. You want to know what happened over the past few days. And after hearing of the illness of brain tumor, actually, on Fitzgerald, our candidate for police chief, his son, his 13-year-old son, went through brain surgery. And then they did another MRI and discovered that there was another mass that he will go through today, another brain surgery. I knew that at that time that Fitzgerald would be preoccupied with the care of his son, as any father, I think, would be. And so I thought it was important to reach out and see who was still available, who among those that have been cited as the best police chiefs around the country. And Harrison certainly has been cited as one of those individuals, I think even in national news, as someone who has the capacity and the ability to not only reduce violence, but also is very familiar with the consent decree that we are currently under.
Right, because New Orleans has a consent decree of its own. And so when is the first time, Madam Mayor, that you spoke with Mr. Harrison? How well do you know him?
Well, I know him first of all, I am an honorary member of the National Organization of Black Law Enforcement Executives in the nation, so I'm pretty familiar with most black police chiefs around the nation. I don't have a long-standing relationship with him, but I am aware through Perf and others that this is one of the top police chiefs, and I felt very comfortable picking up the phone and asking if he would be interested in Baltimore, and that would have been this weekend.
And if he was not in a position to apply a couple months ago, what's the difference between now and then? What was your conversation that persuaded him to apply?
Yeah, I think those are questions that you would have to ask Mr. Harrison. He will have completed his work for 2018. He will get credited for the number of reduction through December of this year. It is the largest reduction in 47 years, down 47% the largest reduction in 47 years, I believe, that New Orleans has experienced.
What was the argument that you used to persuade him to apply for the job?
Well, also, I think for me, my mentor mayor has been Mr. Landrieu, the former mayor of New Orleans.
Who's the mayor that hired Mr. Harrison originally, yeah. So you knew him through Mitch Landrieu?
I know Mitch Landrieu very well.
Mm-hmm. And so the argument that you use with Mr. Harrison, to convince him to...
I have to use an argument. I think that he is familiar with what Baltimore is going through. He's familiar with the consent decree. He's familiar with our violence reduction initiative. I think most police chiefs around the nation are familiar with what cities are going through. He has led national organizations before, so he's pretty knowledgeable. Conversations with the National Organization of Black Law Enforcement well-versed on violence reduction and the consent decree, which is something that's very important to Baltimore.
What were the kinds of questions that he asked you? What were the kinds of assurances that he sought from you from his end in terms of accepting this position if he's confirmed?
Well, I think among the things that he's eager to do is engage with the community. He understands the importance of going out and having conversations. He understands constitutional policing. I don't think there was a whole lot of discussion around this because he's on par and up to date with some of the things that we're concerned about. And so we talked about him coming to Baltimore to become the police chief of Baltimore.
The kind of vetting that was done of Mr. Fitzgerald with a group of city council people going down to Fort Worth, talking to various people in that community, and of course, very serious vetting of the resume. I mean, has that kind of vetting been done on Mr. Harrison yet, or is that to be done in the future?
Let me just say, we vetted a lot of candidates, and we also have let me just be real clear. For every single department head that I've selected, there's been a process. And even we're now down to the top three candidates for the health department. We're down to the final two candidates for the planning department. And so there is a panel of folks, as has been here, with this police department selection. This was not something that was done just me, myself. I don't consider myself a police expert, which is why I called on police experts from around the country to do the interview process. And so they have pushed forward names, and this name, again, was mentioned, but as one of the tops in the country.
The current interim commissioner, Commissioner Tuggle, has said, as a justification for his own decision not to apply for the job, is that it's a 5 to 7 year commitment that he thinks the new chief will have to agree to or invest in order to get the job done. Did you have any conversation with the now the commissioner designate about the length of tenure?
Yeah, let me just be real clear. Fitzgerald would have gotten a 5-year contract, and I don't think that you would give anyone less than a 5-year contract to come do this work.
Mm-hmm.
I'm happy to discuss this at greater length with you. I've considered this interview and had to break some things, but I've got to get back to thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to allow me to participate this morning. So I look forward to discussing this further with you.
All right, Madam Mayor, we appreciate your time as well, and we look forward to having you back on as soon as we can work that out. Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you always.
Mayor Catherine Pugh, she has nominated Michael Harrison. He is the current superintendent of police in New Orleans, Louisiana. He has a very good reputation among a number of people, including one of the folks that we're going to be talking to a little bit later in the program, a guy named Matthew Horace. He's a law enforcement expert, a very experienced cop who's worked at all sorts of levels at federal, state, and local law enforcement. He's the author of a book called The Black and the Blue, A Cop Reveals the Crimes, Racism, and Injustice in America's Law Enforcement. In that book, he says that no one is better suited to transform the culture of a police department than Michael Harrison, who is, as we've been reporting this afternoon, the new nominee for Mayor Catherine Pugh to be the next police commissioner. We're going to take a break, and we're going to come back and talk to a number of folks who are taking a look at this. We are going to be speaking with Jane Miller from WBAL Television a little bit later in the broadcast. We'll speak with Andy Green. We'll also speak with Kevin Litton, who is a reporter in New Orleans who covers City Hall for the New Orleans Times-Picayune. And as I mentioned, we'll talk to Matt Horace. We'll also try to take your calls and comments if we can sneak them in. 410-662-8780. That's our number here at Midday. Our email, midday@wypr.org. You can drop us a tweet at @MiddayWYPR. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us. Good afternoon and welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. We're talking today about the announcement just made this morning by Mayor Catherine Pugh of the City of Baltimore that she has selected New Orleans Police Superintendent Michael Harrison as her choice for Commissioner Designate of the Baltimore Police Department. We just had a brief conversation on a very rotten telephone connection with Mayor Pugh, and now joining us on the line is Jane Miller, the lead investigative reporter at WBAL Television. Hey, Jane, how you doing?
Hey, Tom, how are you?
Doing great, thanks. So you're reporting this morning. Once this news broke, you were one of the first people to break it. What do we know about Mr. Harrison, and what do you expect moving forward in this process?
Well, I can tell you that the reaction to the Harrison announcement is a completely different reaction among many quarters than was to the selection of Joel Fitzgerald. Bill Ferguson, for example, the state senator from the 46th District, who was very critical of the process that led to the Fitzgerald nomination, critical of the Fitzgerald. You know, he had a pretty rough ride in terms of a city council hearing last weekend, even though Fitzgerald wasn't there. This morning, Bill Ferguson gave a completely positive reaction to the selection of Michael Harrison. Harrison is not an unknown commodity at all. He is known nationally. He's been on some of the national cable talk shows talking about police reform and other things involving New Orleans, et cetera. He's obviously very familiar with high rates of violence. He's familiar with corruption. He's familiar with a consent decree. I've said all along in Baltimore there are probably five or maybe fewer candidates that are really well suited to come into Baltimore, and he is certainly on everybody's list in that regard because of his experience in New Orleans.
And there are, it seems, a number of parallels between New Orleans and their police and the relationship, particularly between communities of color and the police in New Orleans, and that same relationship here in Baltimore. So in addition to Mr. Harrison's personal qualifications, whatever they may be, there are some similarities and some analogies to be made between the New Orleans situation vis-a-vis police and Baltimore, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, New Orleans had a terrible reputation for corruption. I one of the reporters that our company owns a station in New Orleans said, like, the worst scandal that he can remember was some petty thing under the reign of Harrison a couple of years ago. Very, very petty, you know, thing. And it was nothing at all like we have seen over the last few years in Baltimore. But, I mean, there's no question, Tom, that there are, I mean, Baltimore is one of the, you know, most violent countries in the city. New Orleans is too, even though it ended in 2018 with about 145 homicides, which is obviously half what we experienced in Baltimore. But their population is also smaller now. So, but they are definitely one of the highest in terms of the rate of violence. They've been under the consent decree longer, I believe, since 2013. So he has much more experience with that coming in than a Joel Fitzgerald would have had. You know, it's interesting because I asked the mayor today, you know, are you saying that, and she may have talked about this, I don't know, I didn't hear everything she said to you. He was the pick of her search panel last summer when her national search was going on.
She actually refuted that assertion today.
Oh, really? Because yeah. He said that. Well, I shouldn't say he was the, he said he had been approached. And he was very high. Let's put it this way. He was high on their list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, many people have reported that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, correct. But he said at that time he wasn't interested in going through the application process. And he didn't want to be. Well, I understand that. I think we're what we now know, looking back, is that he was trying to see through this, you know, drop in gun violence that they've been undergoing for a couple of years, and now they've reached a 47-year low. So, you know, look, this is very similar to Charles Ramsey, who was the chief in D.C., had a lot of success there, moved on to Philadelphia, now is on the consent decree monitoring team. Some of these very well-known law enforcement leaders around the country move around. They move from one department to the other. You're lucky in some cases in a city to be able to get them. We'll see how this goes in Baltimore with, you know, a pretty toxic climate, frankly.
Yeah.
You know, with reaction to those kinds of things. But
and one of the one of the big differences between the Fitzgerald nomination and the Harrison nomination is that Mr. Harrison has reportedly resigned his position as superintendent in New Orleans. Mr. Fitzgerald was holding on to it to kind of see what was going to go on. That's going to set a very different tenor for this nomination, isn't it?
There's no question that the Fitzgerald nomination was never off to the right start. He was here in Baltimore for a very brief couple of days where you didn't really see much of him. He had a very brief news conference. There weren't extensive community meetings. There weren't city council hearings. I mean, you've really got to get off to the right start in this town because there's so much skepticism of the police department and the police relationship with the community. And so the Fitzgerald, it was as if Fitzgerald was not eager to engage at that level. And I don't want to put words in his mouth, and I'm not trying to do that. I'm just saying the perception was that he wasn't willing to invest the time, energy, and goodwill to make his nomination succeed. That's the way it came off. In this case, you have a police chief who's had a lot of experience, who's retiring from New Orleans, who's going to come here as a retired police commander. I mean, I think he's 49 years old. I mean,
right.
You know, police commanders retire young, and has the experience under his belt, according to those who know him, to take on the challenges, the very steep challenges that we have in Baltimore.
He's been in New Orleans for 27 years, started as a beat cop back in 1991.
Yeah, I know. Jack Young put out a press release and said, we want to see his resume. I kind of chuckled. I said, that's like asking for my resume.
Yeah.
You know, like 38 years?
Yeah.
You know, okay, here's my resume. You know, it's like two sentences.
Well, exactly. But and as a matter of fact, Jack Young sent a letter to the mayor, which is dated today, asking for a long list of things. You know, any civil or criminal cases to which the superintendent has been a party, or assurances that
you can Google Michael Harrison, and there's a lot there. I mean,
yeah.
You know, this is not somebody who's been. I mean, clearly there should be a background check, sure, and we should know everything that you know he was part of, et cetera, et cetera. But look, you know, in some ways, Tom, I'm not the only person that said this. The ideal police commissioner doesn't really exist. I mean, there is just not that perfect person.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't. You know, some people want one type of police commissioner. Other people want another type of police commissioner. I was in the Northwest Baltimore community where they've had a string of violence, and the residents there want police to be more aggressive. Other communities want police to be less aggressive. This is the way it is. So what you need is someone that has experience in dealing with the very steep challenges of a city like Baltimore, with its bad relationship with the community, with its need for reform, with its history of corruption, and with its high rate of violence. That's the requirement. And that's what I mean about it. I should use the word perfect. There is no perfect choice. What you want is the best choice.
Yeah,
and that's what everybody needs to focus on is what is the best choice for this city.
And there's also no perfect process, as we found with the nomination of Joel Fitzgerald. This morning, Councilman Brandon Scott, who heads the Public Safety Committee in the Baltimore City Council, issued a statement that says, while I still believe that we should have had a more open, inclusive, and transparent process, I respect the mayor's decision as it abides by current law. That is not a ringing endorsement by any means. Councilman Scott's going to be on midday tomorrow, so we'll talk to him a little bit about this. But the mayor, in her announcement of Mr. Harrison's impending nomination, first of all, again, refers to him as the commissioner designate. That's the same thing that happened with Kevin Davis. Kevin Davis was the commissioner designate until he was then confirmed by the council. But the mayor's statement says that he will participate in a number of meetings with community leaders and neighborhood associations and citizens prior to the formal submission of his nomination. So the mayor is going to wait to formally submit his name to the city council, which then starts the clock ticking in terms
right,
of when
correct.
they have
by
to.
By that time, there will have been introductions to him with the community. I think that's exactly what that means. Yeah, you know, I mean, Tom, you and I have been around a while. We're not going to have an open audition for this job at the War Memorial Building and say, okay, everybody wants to be a Baltimore Police Commissioner, come and sign up. That's not going to happen. I mean, Harrison apparently did not want to go through this process last summer because he didn't want his name out at that time. That, no matter what the job is, you have to understand that people don't want their, you know, want it known necessarily that they may be looking for another job.
Yeah.
That's true in every industry.
So
when we talk about transparency, I'm not quite sure yet what is the ideal in that regard. I think this is a better step that she has announced, that the mayor has announced, as opposed to the Fitzgerald nomination, because she's going to first have Michael Harrison go through some, you know, conversations with the community before she formally submits his name.
Yeah. And so, and I know you got to run because you're reporting this in a very busy news day, and I really do appreciate the time, Jane. But just one other thing. Given all of that, what you've just said, is it likely then we're going to have another circus like we had last Saturday when the Appointments Committee invites all these people to come and stand up and weigh in on their opinion on the police commissioner? That did not go very well for Joel Fitzgerald, who was not able to attend the meeting. But person after person got up and said why he or she thought that Mr. Fitzgerald should not be nominated. Do you think we're going to have anything similar to that in the case of Harrison?
I don't know. You know, the people in Fort Worth said that the process in Baltimore was awkward. It was uncomfortable. I mean, you had a day-long city council hearing with everybody chiming in on their opinion of Joel Fitzgerald when they'd never met him.
Right.
They'd never seen him in a setting of, I mean, I think that kind of thing has to be go hand in hand with a process that allows you to see what is this person all about? What's your crime strategy? What's your relationship? What's your strategy on community policing? What's your strategy to complete the consent decree? I mean, those questions have to be answered. How can you have an opinion of someone when you don't get their, you know, position, strategy, et cetera, up front first?
Exactly.
So I hope that the process that the city council uses is a more, I'm going to use the word fair and effective. Because, look, there are people that don't want any police chief at all. There are people that want to disband the Baltimore Police Department. There are people, as I said, that want a more aggressive police department. So all of those opinions bounce around in this climate. And what you really need to do as the in City Hall between the mayor and the city council is to engage a process that gets you the best information so that you can get the best result.
Jane Miller is the lead investigative reporter at WBAL Television. Jane, thanks so much. Appreciate the time on a busy day. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, Tom. Thank you.
We turn now to Kevin Litton from New Orleans. He covers City Hall for the Times-Picayune in New Orleans. He's a former reporter for the Baltimore Business Journal. He used to report about real estate when he was here in Baltimore. He left Baltimore in 2015 and has, as I said, been covering City Hall in New Orleans. Kevin, welcome to Midday. Thanks for your time today.
Hey, Tom. Thanks again. It's nice to be back on Baltimore Radio.
Indeed. You are a veteran of this very program, and we appreciate the time. So what can you tell us about Michael Harrison? How is he thought of down in NOLA?
Well, I think one thing to keep in mind is that we have a new mayor who took office in May, and so the majority of Michael Harrison's tenure was under former Mayor Mitch Landrieu, and I think we learned the most about Michael Harrison during that time. One thing about Mayor Landrieu's approach is that they ran a very disciplined communication operation there, and I think one thing I've always been struck by with Michael Harrison is that, you know, when he appears with the mayor, he's very much, you can tell that he's very much loyal, but he's also very much on message. He's a really engaging speaker. He's had this involvement with the community, which I think is really interesting, that I think people in Baltimore will come to appreciate. He is a member of a church, and I've actually seen him even preach at the church. So he really understands, like, the integration of the importance of churches in historic urban core neighborhoods. Very, you know, New Orleans and Baltimore have you know, very interesting shared history as a port city and as a historic core neighborhoods. So I think he's understood that, but I think really the big thing that Michael Harrison has gotten attention for here is his administration of the consent decree. And he's been one police chief that the federal monitors have really appreciated his approach. And one thing that I was always struck by, and this goes along with that messaging I was talking about that Mayor Landrieu had, was that Michael Harrison always said that, look, if we get this consent decree done, we're going to become the department that we should be. And that was very similar to how Mitch Landrieu saw the city after Katrina, where he said, we don't want to put the city back to where it was before. We want to build the city that it really should be. And I think that's been Michael Harrison's approach to administering this consent decree.
When you talk to folks on the street, I mean, do they, because obviously one of the main goals of the consent decree, both in New Orleans and here in Baltimore, which is at a much different point in the process, we're at the early stages, whereas the consent decree in New Orleans has been in effect for, what, about 10 years, I guess, now, right?
Yeah, started in 2012.
Yeah, so Is there a palpable, demonstrable, recognizable difference, improvement in the relationship between the police and the community?
Yeah, I mean, just in the last year, one of the accomplishments that Harrison cited was that they got better marks on their community satisfaction survey. So they have been seeing improvements there. They've been seeing improvements in recruitment. And I think one interesting thing to think about in terms of Baltimore's history with Freddie Gray is that, you know, during that period where there was a lot of upheaval and you would see these relationships, these really unproductive relationships between community and police, when that happened in Louisiana, it did happen in Louisiana, but it happened in Baton Rouge with Alton Sterling. And NOPD really has made movements with this consent decree to try to improve that relationship. I don't think it's perfect, but the consent decree has several initiatives under it. One of them is an officer assistance program, which tries to provide resources to officers who need counseling. They have an ethical program. They have a program where they try to raise red flags about officers if they miss too much work or have too many complaints filed against them. And this is, these are all things that Michael Harrison has, you know, rather than resist them, he's really embraced them. And that didn't always happen under this NOPD and their former chiefs. I mean, well, I think when the consent decree started, it was actually seen as an adversarial kind of relationship. And I think that, you know, Michael Harrison is probably not going to bring that to Baltimore, obviously, with his track record here. But, you know, I think Baltimore may have had the potential to have that, depending on who you pick. And I think your earlier guest talked about getting that right fit for the job. I mean, not every police chief likes what the federal monitors want out of a consent decree program.
Sarah Meehan, a reporter for the Baltimore Sun, reports today that in July of 2017, when the consent decree monitoring team surveyed the rank-and-file officers in the New Orleans Police Department, 80% said that they thought Mr. Harrison was leading the department in the right direction. So if he's got community support, it also appears that he has support among his rank-and-file. That's going to be a challenge here in Baltimore as well.
Yeah, no question. I think, but that took a long time to get there. He's been here for 4 years, and the consent decree's been in place longer. And these improvements have been slow in coming. I think there are also frustrations here that the crime remains unacceptably high. We did have we have reached a low in our murder rate since the 1970s, which is positive, but it's not a huge number amount below. We had a number of shootings in late December. We had a shooting every day since December 20 through the end of the year. We had 7 murders during that time. There was a mass shooting in July that left 3 dead and 7 injured. So, I mean, New Orleans, it really does face some problems here that gun violence in particular and the availability of guns is really tough. So I think, you know, New Orleans has a ways to go. Baltimore, I think, from my reading of the situation in Baltimore, is it's even more challenging. I believe this is Michael Harrison will be the third police chief since I left in 2015.
He'll be the fourth one in 2000 in the last year. So I mean, we turned those over pretty quickly. Well, look, Kevin Litton, I really appreciate the time and your insight, particularly from a guy who knows Baltimore and knows New Orleans. So thanks so much. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on.
Kevin Litton covers City Hall for the New Orleans Times-Picayune. He's a former reporter for the Baltimore Business Journal. We are talking about the appointment of Michael Harrison to be the next police chief of the city of Baltimore. He has been nominated. He is now the commissioner designate. And when we come back from a break, we're going to talk to Matthew Horace. He wrote a terrific book about the bias in police departments, not just in Baltimore and New Orleans, but around the country. It's called The Black and the Blue: A Cop Reveals the Crimes, Racism, and Injustice in America's Law Enforcement. I'm Tom Hall. You're listening to Midday. Stay with us. Good afternoon. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. If you've just joined us, we're talking about the process moving forward to find a new police commissioner for the city of Baltimore. Baltimore Mayor Catherine Pugh announced this morning her intention to submit the name of Michael Harrison to the city council to be the next police chief of the BPD. News organizations are reporting that Mr. Harrison has announced his resignation from his current job. He's the superintendent of the New Orleans Police Department. He will be the Baltimore Police Commissioner designate until his nomination is considered by the Baltimore City Council. We will speak with three members of the City Council tomorrow here on Midday to get their sense of how the process will proceed. We are joined now by Matthew Horace. He is the author of a book called The Black and the Blue, A Cop Reveals the Crimes, Racism, and Injustice in America's Law Enforcement. Mr. Horace worked in law enforcement for 28 years in both the federal and state as well as local law enforcement levels. He was 20 years with the ATF. He served as an anti-ATF violent crime supervisor here in Baltimore. He joins us on the line from Denver. Matt Horace, welcome back to Midday.
Well, good morning, Tom. Thanks for having me.
So you write in your book about Mr. Harrison. This is a man whose work you are familiar with. You say that Harrison is a case study for how departments across the nation should be looking at our profession differently. Why is that?
Well, I think when you look at some of the challenges that the New Orleans Police Department has faced through the years and some of the things that Superintendent Harrison has seen and dealt with personally, I think it positions him to be a perfect choice to come into Baltimore and sort of promulgate and lead some of the change in a very transformational way. He's proving himself to be a transformational leader, and it sounds to me like the community, the police department, and others are all calling for some sense of transformation. So I applaud this pick.
You write in your book that culture eats strategy for breakfast. The culture of the Baltimore Police Department, many, many people have asserted for some time now that the culture needs a vast reworking. It needs to be completely overhauled. What is the difference? What's the distinction between culture and strategy? And what makes you believe that Mr. Harrison is so effective in changing the culture, as apparently he has begun to do, at least, in New Orleans?
Well, as you cited, there are many, many, many great police leaders out here, and many have succeeded and many have failed and been placed in situations where they have great strategy and great experience, but they still have a problem overcoming the existing culture. Many cities like Philadelphia and Chicago, New York, Baltimore, they have such strong cultures, such strong unions, it makes it very difficult for even the best leaders to get things done. But in this case, when you look at some of the things that New Orleans dealt with, the officers committing murders on the Dantier Bridge, a couple of the officers we write about in the book who committed homicide while on duty in uniform, money, graft, officers doing illegal drug trafficking. He has seen it all as it relates to integrity in law enforcement. So I don't think anything that can happen in Baltimore within the ranks is going to surprise Superintendent Harrison.
When he comes to Baltimore, he will leave the only police department he's known. He did some other things before he joined the police department, but he's been in New Orleans since 1991. He will be a fresh face, to be sure, in Baltimore. Will the fact that he's coming from outside the department help him, hinder him, or be a neutral factor in terms of how he relates to the rank and file?
Well, I think if he establishes some ground rules early on, if he brings in some people or hires some people internally to be his eyes and his ears, I think it can be a neutral factor. Because as you know, sometimes having a fresh set of eyes gives you a different view of things. And sometimes a part of the culture is everybody came up in the same culture, so we all have the same set of eyes, so we all believe what we're doing is right. And that's not always the case. So having a different leadership style, a different person, a fresh set of eyes on the same problems, I think will prove very rewarding for Baltimore.
In the case of Joel Fitzgerald, the police chief in Fort Worth, who's now withdrawn his nomination for the job here in Baltimore, there have been a number of concerns from a number of different corners of the community about the process and about transparency and vetting of these candidates in a public way. Mr. Harrison did not apply for the Baltimore commissioner job. He was sort of on the sidelines throughout this process, although there are reports that at one point in the process he was the first pick of the committee that the mayor asked to consider various candidates. What, in your view, is the right balance between transparency and openness with members of the community at large and the very personal and specific and difficult process of you know, really a small group of people charged with this important task to find that right person?
Well, you know, you cited it earlier, your guest cited it earlier. Baltimore is a very different city with different political nuances. If you looked at what happened in Chicago put out a national search utilizing a very well-paid search firm, and they were interviewing police leaders from all around the country. And at the end of the day, Rahm Emanuel still chose Eddie Johnson, who was an insider who didn't even apply for the job. So there, even though people want transparency, there are also other ways that you can get to the best candidate. And I'm quite sure that there are any number of police leaders around the country that had they had the opportunity to speak to the mayor, they would have also voiced their a position and possibly been in that final round of consideration.
In your book, you write that the wrongs inside police departments are not about a handful of bad police officers. Instead, they reflect bad policing procedures and policies that many of our departments have come to accept as gospel. And to fix the problem requires a realignment of our thinking about the role police play. Is Mr. Harrison going to be able to come here as an unknown quantity in Baltimore and do that kind of major overhaul, that big realignment of getting the community to think about the role police play in a very different way?
Right. Well, you know, if you want to go to places you've never been, then you got to do things you've never done. And in this case, Baltimore is taking a heroic step, in my view, by going out and getting someone who's actually done this. He's designed programs to engage the community in a more productive way. He's dealt with officer attrition and officer recruitment in one of the most difficult environments that I can imagine to work with, given the pay. He's fought for higher pay for the police officers in New Orleans and higher standards to get better people. He's established officer accountability measures in New Orleans to help cops be more accountable for cops. And this is under the very worst conditions. And if you use examples like Hurricane Katrina as one and what happened there, these are abhorrent examples of bad policing. So I think if you do nothing, you get nothing. If you do something, hopefully you get something. And I think that he's going to be the guy to get this done with a very capable command staff.
We got to let you go, but before I do, let me ask you a question about Joel Fitzgerald, who's he and his family are going through a very difficult period now with their son, their teenage son, facing some very serious medical challenges. But assuming that those work out positively, as we all pray they do, the process here in Baltimore that Mr. Fitzgerald was part of was certainly very well known in Fort Worth. Can Mr. Fitzgerald continue as the police chief in Fort Worth and be effective with given the fact that that community knows he was very seriously looking elsewhere?
Well, I think he can. There's two facets to this. Number one, he withdrew his name allegedly because of the issue with his son and because of the overwhelming groundswell of support for him there. But number two, the rank and file know. When they have nationally known police leaders, the rank and file live every day knowing that these men and women may not be there for very long. So this is not something that police departments aren't used to in Philadelphia, in Chicago, in New York, and others. So I think he can still continue to serve in a great way. And who knows, he may stay there for the rest of his leadership career, or he may move on to a bigger job at some point. But he can be productive there.
Matthew Horace is the author of The Black and the Blue, A Cop Reveals the Crimes, Racism, and Injustice in America's Law Enforcement. Matt Horace, it's always a pleasure to speak with you, sir. Thank you so much, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, Tom. Thank you. Bye-bye.
We turn now to Andy Green. He runs the editorial page at the Baltimore Sun. Andy, welcome back to Midday. Good to talk to you.
Hi, Tom.
So what's your reaction to the announcement of Michael Harrison as the mayor's new nominee?
Well, I was a little whipsawed when I opened my email this morning and saw that. You know, there had been many calls from us and lots of other people in the community, as some of your guests have already alluded to have a more open and transparent process. Certainly, it sounds like Brandon Scott, the city councilman, is still a little concerned about that. This is a very bold move for her to go and sort of say, no, I'm not listening to that. I think I've got the right guy. I'm going with him. If he comes here and succeeds, that's going to be a defining moment for Mayor Catherine Pugh. If he fails, it's going to be a defining moment in the opposite direction. You know, I think this is really a make or break decision for her. You know, it was always going to be a make or break decision, her next police commissioner, but this, I think, very much ups the stakes and makes it very important, I think, how she and Mr. Harrison handle what happens next in terms of building support in the community, you know, getting sort of a grassroots buy-in before he goes before the city council for confirmation.
The mayor has promised a number of meetings with community leaders and neighborhood associations and various people. What would you like to see happen in those meetings? Is the meeting that happened last Saturday, called by Robert Stokes Jr. or Senior as the chair of the appointments committee, is that a model that should be used for the meetings that
Not
Mr. Harrison?
No. Jane Miller hit it on the head. All these people came and gave an opinion about him based on no firsthand knowledge of the guy whatsoever, which unfortunately neither he nor the mayor had managed to provide for them. So we need a situation where people actually have an informed opinion about Mr. Harrison before we get to that kind of point. He needs to start making the rounds as soon as possible. And we've invited, we've reached out to the mayor's office and asked him to come before the editorial board, so hopefully he'll do that. But, you know, in terms of community meetings, in terms of meetings with the rank and file, apparently he is, our colleagues at the Sun are reporting, he is going to come and serve as acting commissioner starting in a couple of weeks. So he will actually be on the job. We'll get a chance to see him in action. The officers on the force will get a chance to get to know him. We'll get a sense of what his crime-fighting philosophy is in a way that we never got with Joel Fitzgerald. So, you know, this is the established path in Baltimore. This is how it has been done for every commissioner in recent memory. They have come and been on the job for a while before we hold the confirmation vote. And so I think that's a little bit of a return to normalcy and hopefully will make this process go a little more smoothly this time through.
You mentioned how the mayor's political fortunes may well be tied very directly to Mr. Yeah. Harrison's effectiveness. What, in your view, is a sort of a reasonable and fair time frame to expect that Mr. Harrison could turn things around? Of course, the mayor is up for re-election, assuming she decides to run in 2020. If Mr. Harrison starts, you know, sometime in the beginning of 2019, how long should we expect to have to wait to see some real changes?
Well, I think the current acting commissioner, Gary Tuggle, is right that this is a long process to turn around the Baltimore Police Department. You know, we need to do two very difficult things at the same time, which are to reform the department, rebuild community trust, and handle all of the things that need to be done pursuant to the consent decree, while simultaneously driving down the violent crime in the city. They aren't mutually exclusive, and I think we need a leader who really understands how they can be done in concert. And that's, I think, one of the most encouraging things about this nominee, is that he has had experience in a similar situation in New Orleans. So I don't think it's fair to say that by the time Mayor Pugh is up for re-election that this or any police commissioner will have solved the problems. But I do think you need to see things starting to head in the right direction. We need to start seeing real, genuine implementations of reforms in terms of training, in terms of policies, in terms of procedures. I think we do need to see at least some movement in crime in the right direction. You know, there's been maybe a little bit of it last year. We need to see that continue. I don't think we're going to expect him to have brought this department to where it needs to be by the 2020 election. But I think he needs to have established a really solid relationship with this community. He needs to demonstrate progress, and I think then it can be judged a success.
Just have a few seconds left, Andy, but given the fact that he will be on the job as commissioner-designate, Mr. Harrison will also be in the process of being vetted at the same time. The fact that those are happening concurrently, I mean, Brandon Scott alluded to that in a statement that he issued today, that he wished that the whole process, even in this case, Mr. Harrison was more transparent. He was indicating that it would have been better for the mayor to do some vetting first and then do some talking and then announce. The mayor announced quickly, 24 hours after Mr. Fitzgerald withdrew. Is the vetting process and the process of actually beginning the job, are they potentially in conflict with each other?
This is nothing new in Baltimore. If you'll recall, Martin O'Malley named Leonard Hamm as the acting chief, and then the Sun reported some questionable details in his bankruptcy filing in the past. And he was basically put on ice during the vetting process as acting commissioner for 3 or 4 months before the city council finally got his official nomination confirmation.
Yeah, we've been there, done that. Yeah, we can do this then. Yeah. Well, Andy, that's all the time we have. I appreciate your time this afternoon. Thanks so much. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, thanks, Tom.
All right, that's it for us today. Coming up tomorrow, we'll talk to some members of the Baltimore City Council about the nomination of Michael Harrison to be the next police commissioner of the Baltimore City Police Department. We want to thank Joe's Squared for providing lunch today. They also provide catering and a party room for all of your events. You can find out more at joesquared.com. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for listening. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow.